I want you to look at your scent folder for a second. Just, you know, mentally picture it.
Okay.
You've probably got thousands of emails in there. Client strategies, maybe some medical info, financial records. That draft of a merger agreement you sent last Tuesday.
All the sensitive stuff.
Right. And you hit send. You saw the little padlock icon or the encrypted notification. And you just, you moved on. You feel safe.
It's the lock it and leave it mentality. We trust the math.
We do. But here is the... Well, the provocative question we need to wrestle with today. What if I told you that safety has an expiration date?
An expiration date.
Yeah, and worse, what if for some of that data you just pictured, the expiration date has already passed and you're just walking around with a false sense of security?
That is the chilling part. We tend to think of encryption as permanent, like pouring concrete. Once it sets, it's a wall.
Sure.
But physics, specifically quantum physics, views it more like a block of ice.
It's solid right now, yeah. But the room is getting warmer. And eventually, the ice melts and everything inside is exposed. That is the terrifying, but honestly fascinating premise of the material we are covering today.
It really is.
We're doing a deep dive into class 2 of the Quantum Law course created by Ralph Luzzi. The class is titled Q-Day, Encryption, and Why Confidentiality Now Comes with an Expiration Date.
And getting to dive into Ralph Luzzi's work is always a treat because he isn't just some theorist sitting in an ivory tower. He's a retired trial lawyer.
Right. He was the lead attorney in that the De Silva Moore case back in 2012.
Wasn't that a huge deal?
Oh, it was massive. It was the first case to judicially approve the use of predictive coding AI in legal discovery.
So Luzzi has a track record of spotting these massive technological tidal waves about a decade before they, you know, crash onto the shore of the legal profession.
Exactly. And today, that wave is Q-Day.
And before everyone panics and thinks we're about to do 40 minutes of particle physics, we are not. Please know.
Our mission is to unpack this looming event horizon for digital secrecy. We're going to look at why current encryption is essentially living on borrowed time, this nightmare strategy hackers are using, called harvest now, decrypt later.
Mm-hmm.
And a mathematical formula. Yeah, okay. A tiny bit of algebra that proves you might already be late to prepare.
What stands out to me in class 2 is that Luzzi frames this explicitly as a governance and liability problem.
Right.
If you are a lawyer, a judge, or a corporate leader, you can't just send this ticket to the IT help desk. This is about your duty of care.
So let's jump right in with a headline event, Q-Day. When I first read that in the course syllabus, it sounded like a summer blockbuster movie.
It does have that ring to it.
Is this a specific date? Like, do we have a circle on the calendar for a Tuesday in 2030?
I wish we did. It would make risk management a lot easier. But no, Q-Day isn't a calendar date. It represents a capability threshold.
A threshold.
It's the specific moment in time when a quantum computer becomes powerful enough and stable enough to break standard public key encryption.
Public key encryption. That's the stuff securing basically everything on the internet right now, isn't it?
Pretty much the entire backbone of the digital world. Credit card transactions, emails, legal filings, government secrets. I mean, all of it.
And those systems rely on math problems that are just incredibly hard for classical computers to solve.
Right. Specifically factoring massive numbers. And by classical, you mean everything we use today.
Yes. The laptop you're on, the phone in your pocket, even the fastest supercomputer on Earth, they're all classical.
And it would take a supercomputer millions of years to crack these keys.
So we feel safe because the math is too hard for the machine.
Exactly. But Q-Day is the moment a quantum computer walks in and solves that same problem in minutes.
In minutes.
Maybe seconds.
Okay, so that's the threat.
Yeah.
But I can hear the skeptic in the audience right now. They're thinking, great, Q-Day might be 10 or 15 years away. I'll be retired by then.
Or I'll just update my software in 2034. Why stress today? That is the exact attitude that leads to the biggest danger Luzzi highlights in this class. It's a concept called harvest now, decrypt later.
Harvest now, decrypt later. You'll see it as HNDL.
Mm-hmm.
Harvest now. It sounds almost agricultural, but I have a feeling we aren't talking about wheat.
No, we're talking about your secrets. The reality is that adversaries, hackers, nation states, corporate spies, they are stealing encrypted data right now, today.
So they can't read it.
They can't read it yet because it's encrypted, but they aren't throwing it away. They are storing it, harvesting it.
So they're basically just hoarding locked safe deposit boxes.
That's the perfect analogy.
Just waiting for someone to invent the master key.
They are building this massive library of secrets. And as soon as Q-Day arrives, they feed all that harvested data into a quantum computer.
And up. The lock just opens.
Everything becomes readable.
That is incredibly sneaky. It's like a time travel crime.
It effectively creates what he calls a temporal mismatch. The breach happens today in 2025 or 2026, but the actual harm, the liability, the exposure, that happens years later.
This completely changes how we have to think about data security. It's not just, is it safe now? It's all about the shelf life of secrets.
Exactly. If I'm emailing my spouse about picking up dry cleaning, who cares if China reads that in 10 years?
Right.
That data has a shelf life of about 4 hours.
But if I'm emailing trade secrets or the details of a merger or protected health information,
those things need to stay secret for decades, maybe a lifetime. So if your data needs to remain confidential for 20 years, but quantum computers break the lock in 15 years,
then that data is already compromised.
You've already failed. Yeah. It effectively has an expiration date that falls before it stops being sensitive.
The course material makes a really important distinction here between data in transit and data at rest. Why is data in transit the bigger target for this harvest strategy?
Well, it comes down to opportunity and the type of lock used. Data in transit, you know, information moving over the internet, like emails or API calls, is the primary target because it has to travel through public networks.
It's out in the open.
It's out there. And crucially, it almost exclusively relies on public key encryption, which is the exact type of encryption that quantum computers are uniquely good at breaking.
Whereas data at rest files just sitting on a hard drive is harder to get to.
Generally, yes. And data at rest often uses a different kind, symmetric encryption, which is much tougher for quantum computers to crack. But here's the trap.
Okay.
The moment you attach that secure file to an email and hit send,
you've put it in transit.
You've just potentially handed it to the harvester.
I want to get into the mechanics of why the lock breaks, because I think there is a huge misconception that we need to clear up. People think, oh, I have a really complicated password, you know, numbers, symbols, a capital letter. I'm safe.
And Lucy is very, very clear on this in the course. Passwords are not encryption.
They're just the bouncer at the club, right?
Exactly. A password just decides if you get let in the front door. The encryption key is the actual mechanical lock on the data itself.
Right.
Quantum computers don't guess your password. They don't care about your password at all. They break the math behind the key itself.
The course uses this brilliant analogy from class one, which builds the intuition for all this, comparing a classical computer to a mouse and a quantum computer to water. I love this visualization.
It's a powerful image. Imagine a giant maze. The exit represents the solution, the encryption key.
Okay.
A classical computer is like a mouse running through that maze. It tries one path, hits a dead end, runs back, tries another.
It's trial and error, it's fast, but it's doing one thing at a time.
Precisely. And if the maze is the size of the universe, the mouse will die of old age before it finds a way out. That's why our current encryption works.
But the quantum computer isn't a mouse.
No. A quantum computer, it works differently. Thanks to this property called superposition.
Superposition.
It acts like water flooding the entire maze.
Oh, okay. So it's not trying one path.
It's not picking a path at all. It flows into all the paths simultaneously.
So it finds the exit almost instantly.
Almost instantly. Not because it's faster, but because it's everywhere at once.
That is slightly terrifying, but it explains why just making the encryption key longer, which is what we usually do to fix security, doesn't work here.
Nope.
The water just fills the bigger maze.
You can make the maze as big as you want. The water still flows through it.
So we know the threat is real, and we know harvest now, decrypt later means we might already be in trouble. But how do we actually calculate that risk? Luzi introduces a formula called Mosca's inequality. And I promise no math, but this is simple algebra and it's actually really helpful.
It is. It's the logic of Michele Mosca, a prominent researcher. The formula is basically, if x plus yz, you have a serious problem.
Okay, let's break down the variables. What is x?
X is shelf life. How long must this specific piece of data remain secret? For legal records or health data, that could be, say, 20 years.
Okay. And y?
Y is migration time. How long will it take your whole organization to completely upgrade its security infrastructure to something quantum safe?
And that's not an overnight update.
No, not at all. It involves vendors, hardware, training. Let's be optimistic and say that takes 5 years.
5 years, okay. And Z?
Z is the time to Q day. When will the quantum computer actually arrive? Estimates vary, but let's just use 15 years for this example.
So let me do the math here.
Sure.
If I have data that needs to be secret for 20 years, that's X.
Yep.
And it takes me 5 years to upgrade, that's Y. So 20 plus 5 is 25.
Twenty-five.
But Q day, Z, is only 15 years away. So 25 is greater than 15.
And that gap, that 10-year difference, is what Luzi calls the hidden timing trap. You are already 10 years too late. Even though the computer doesn't exist yet, you have failed to protect that data for its required lifespan.
That is a sobering realization.
Yeah.
It basically means waiting for certainty, waiting for CNN to announce that Q-Day is here is the riskiest thing you can do.
It's negligence. And this connects to the bigger picture of legal liability. The source material highlights some really specific traps for lawyers and companies. One that stood out to me was the deemed export risk.
Oh, this was wild. It sounds like something out of a spy novel.
It's a very real HR liability. If a U.S. company allows a foreign national employee, even someone legally working inside their U.S. lab, to see quantum source code or visual schematics,
let's see it.
The government considers that an export to that person's home country.
So you don't even have to email it. Just letting them see the whiteboard is an export violation.
Yes. It requires technology control plans, not just a standard security clearance. It just shows how the legal landscape is becoming a minefield even before the technology is fully mature.
Another area that shocked me was the bit about sealed court records. As a lawyer, you think, it's under seal, the judge ordered it, it's safe.
But a legal seal is a command to humans. It is not a barrier to physics. If those sealed records are transmitted over the open internet using old encryption, which happens constantly with e-filing systems, they are vulnerable to harvest now, decrypt later.
So the judge's order doesn't stop the quantum computer from reading the file in 10 years.
Not at all. And think about the malpractice implications. I mean, are lawyers advising their clients that sealed doesn't mean physically secure forever?
And Luzi also mentions vendor liability and Mall Rule 5.3. Basically, you can't just blame the cloud provider, right?
Correct. You can't. Well, lawyers are responsible for the non-lawyer assistance they use. If your vendor is negligent in their quantum migration, that liability flows right back to you. You have to ask the hard questions now.
So surely there is a solution. We aren't just doomed to have all our secrets exposed.
There is a solution, but it requires action. It's called post-quantum cryptography, or PQC.
Is that just, you know, stronger encryption, like a thicker steel door?
Not exactly. It's not about strength in the traditional sense. It's about different math.
Different math.
Yeah, it uses mathematical structures that are complex even for quantum computers. Things like grids and lattices that the water can't easily flow through.
And this isn't theoretical anymore, right? The government is involved.
Yes, very involved. In 2024, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, finalized the standards for this.
Okay.
Specifically FIPS 203, 204, and 205. This is now the baseline for what is considered reasonable security. If you aren't moving toward these standards, you aren't meeting the standard of care.
The source material gives a great real-world example of how to implement this without breaking everything. It mentions how Apple is handling iMessage.
Apple's approach is textbook risk management. They use what's called hybrid encryption.
Hybrid.
Think of it as putting two locks on the door. One is the classic encryption we use today. It's battle-tested, proven. The second lock is the new post-quantum algorithm.
So if the quantum computer picks the classic lock,
the post-quantum lock still holds. And if it turns out the new post-quantum lock has some flaw we didn't know about,
the classic lock still holds.
Exactly. It's a brilliant way to transition safely.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's one more strategy mentioned that I think is my favorite because it's so low tech. Defensive deletion.
It is the ultimate liability shield. The only data a quantum computer cannot decrypt is data that has been deleted.
Mm-hmm.
We hoard data thinking it's an asset, but in a harvest now world, old data is purely a liability. If you don't need it, destroy it.
Data minimization sounds so boring until you realize it's the only thing that guarantees safety.
It really is the only guarantee.
So what does this all mean for us? We've covered a lot of ground from, you know, quantum mechanics to legal ethics.
I think the main takeaway is that Q-Day isn't a tech problem that you can ignore until it makes the news.
Right.
It is a governance and liability problem that is happening right now. The decisions you make today about what data to keep, what vendors to trust, how to encrypt your files, all of that determines your liability in the future.
And this touches on a concept that Luzi teases for Class 4, which is the idea of the control loop.
Right. The idea is that lawyers and leaders can't be expected to understand the quantum physics equations. You don't need to know how to build the machine.
Thank goodness.
But you must act as a control loop. You monitor the risk. You adjust the parameters like migration timelines and data retention policies. And you govern the system. You manage the probability.
I love that. You don't have to be the mechanic. You just have to be the driver who pays attention to the road.
That's the perfect way to see it.
Now, Obviously, we have only scratched the surface of what is in the full quantum law course. We focused on class two today, but the course is designed as a progression, isn't it?
It really is a journey. Class one builds that intuition we talked about, the maze and the water. It gets you comfortable with the concepts.
Okay.
Then class two, which we discussed today, lays out the threat. Class three moves into evidence. How do you prove things in court when the computer speaks in probabilities? And class four covers AI systems.
But then there's class five. I looked at the outline for class five and it seems different.
Class five is where the lawyer takes off the tie and looks at the stars. It goes deep into the philosophy and the multiverse.
The multiverse. That brings me to the coolest bonus mentioned in the source material. For people who take the course, there is an invitation to a fireside chat.
Yes, and I think this is crucial. It's described as a safe, confidential, informal space to talk directly with Ralph Luzzi.
And it's explicitly mentioned that this is the place to ask the wild questions.
Right, because the course raises these huge questions about reality. In class five, Luzzi discusses the theories of Hugh Everett and Laura Mersini Houghton, the idea that quantum mechanics implies we live in a multiverse.
Which is a lot to process for a lawyer just trying to secure a contract.
It is, and you can't exactly raise your hand in a partner meeting and ask, but what about the version of me in the parallel universe?
Oh, probably not.
Exactly. But the fireside chat is where you can explore those intersections of law, reality, and philosophy without fear of judgment. It's about connecting as colleagues who are grappling with how the world is changing.
I think that's fantastic. It moves the conversation from just compliance to actual curiosity.
And that's what this deep dive is all about, understanding that the world is changing at a really fundamental level.
So here is the final thought I want to leave you with. We live in a world of harvest now, decrypt later. Every email you send, every file you save is being watched by a timeline you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Your silence today is only as secure as the physics of tomorrow.
That is the reality. The question is, are you preparing for it?
Thanks for diving in with us. Check out the full course to really get your hands on this. Until next time, keep those secrets safe and maybe hit delete on a few old files.
Indeed. Goodbye.